सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति Today, by the grace of the Lord, we would be venturing into the study of the Upanishads. Now, there are said to be more than 200 Upanishads. 200 also, they say it's a debatable number. There are said to be more than 200 Upanishads, out of which about 108 is considered to be orthodox. And we have about 10 principal Upanishads because it's commented by all the three great masters, Adi Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya, the champions of Advaita and Dvaita and Visheshadvaita philosophy. So Upanishad forms the last part of the Vedas. As you know, there are four Vedas. Vedas means the body of knowledge. And we have four Vedas, Rig, Sama, Yajur and Atharvana. So, all these Vedas are split into four parts. They are called Mantra, Brahmana, Aranyaka and Upanishads. Mantra, Brahmana, Aranyaka put together are called as Veda Purva Bhaga. And Upanishads are called as the Veda Ant Bhaga. So, Veda Purva Bhaga means the beginning portion of the Vedas. Ant Bhaga means the end portion of the Vedas. Now, if you take any religion, whether it is our Sanatana Dharma or you take Christianity or Islam or any religion, they'll have two aspects to it. One is the religious ritualistic aspect and the other is the philosophical content. So in Sanatana Dharma also, they have the ritualistic portions which comes in Mantra, Brahmanya and Aranyaka. There are some Upanishads which come in Aranyaka also. They are called, like for example, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Aranyaka means forest. So forest texts. Basically, the Upanishads, since they form the last portion of the Vedas, they are called as Vedanta Bhaga. Vedanta means Upanishads. And a lot of people ask, sir, are you going to teach Upanishad? Are you going to teach Bhagavad Gita? What are you going to teach? As if Bhagavad Gita is something different. Bhagavad Gita is the gist of the Upanishads. That's why Madhusudana Saraswati, who gave the, invocation to the Bhagavad Gita, what was called as Dhyana Shlokas. In one of the verses, he beautifully compares the Upanishads to the cows. And Sri Krishna to the cowherd boy, and Arjuna to the calf. So in the presence of the calf, the cow gives milk, which the cowherd boy takes it and gives it to the whole world. So the Upanishadic message is what is given elaborately in the Bhagavad Gita. So generally the literature, the knowledge is split into two categories called as Shruti and Smriti. Shruti means that which is heard. Smriti means that which is remembered. So in the order, Shruti comes first. Shruti means it is directly revealed by the sages who had dissolved their egos and merged with Brahman. So it is God speaking as it were. That is why it's called as apaurusham. Paurusham means that which is a product of the human effort. Apaurusham means something beyond the product of the human effort. So every human being that we have seen in the Vedanta before also, that God plus Vasanas equals human beings and human beings minus Vasanas equals God. So when a person exhausts all the Vasanas and merges with Brahman, the divinity speaks through them as it were. So when the divinity speaks through them as it were, that is the Upanishads. So the Upanishads are called as Shruti. Then later on, the great masters, they have given texts which are called Smriti, which has come from their remembrance. So in the order of, in the highest order, first will be Shruti and then Smriti. So Bhagavad Gita can be categorized as both Shruti and Smriti. So here the Upanishads, which forms the last portion of the Vedas, are called as Veda Ant Bhag, wherein the philosophy of life and living is given. Upanishads introduces us to our real self. And the primary message in the Upanishad is your true nature, what you essentially are. Until we know our true nature, our life purpose is not fulfilled, and even we will be meandering in life. So a person who's realized the self alone lives the life in its entirety. So this Upanishads are the philosophical texts given by the great masters who were realized souls, and they were given to the students who were qualified, who risked their lives and went to the forests in search of these masters and surrendered to them and sought the knowledge. In the case of Bhagavad Gita, it was not like that. Arjuna was not a student who would, risk his life and go to the forest to find a master to ask the essential questions of life. No. He, in a context, got into a situation, he fell into what was called as Dharam Sankat. Dharam Sankat means few more aspects of dharams are there, or levels of dharams are there, out of which one to select, that's the question. And depending on our limitation of our intellect, we only see one particular level or few levels of dharam. When our intellect is subtle and deep, you would be able to see deeper realms of dharam. So Arjuna was also caught up in a particular realm of dharam. So he said, how can I kill my own guru, my own great-grandfather, my own cousins? And some of them were good people, especially Bhishma, Drona, they were good people. So this is the dharam which he knew. He didn't know a higher dharam. So he was confused. He doesn't know what to do. What am I supposed to do? As a grahastha, as a kshatriya, my dharam is to fight the battle. But as a descendant of the family, the great grandfather, Bhishmacharya, was a good human being. And also as a Sishya, my guru Dronacharya is a good human being. How can I kill them? So I caught in between two dharams. So this is what you call as dharam sankat. So when you go deep and find the ultimate dharam, which is your essential nature, that's what the Upanishad talks about. The highest dharam. Until and unless one finds the self, one's life's purpose is not complete. It's not fulfilled. You will still feel the sense of incompleteness and struggle. So therefore, the Upanishads declare the highest. And they have declared this highest through four aphorisms. The four aphorisms feature in four different Vedas, different Upanishads. So the first one is Prajnanam Brahma. Prajnanam Brahma means the consciousness is Brahman. That pure consciousness is Brahman. Now, to our naked eyes, ears, to our organs of perception, what is available is this matter. So this matter is one realm of reality. And when you probe a little bit, there is another realm of reality called energy. So the science tells us that the law of conservation of energy also states that energy can neither be created nor be destroyed. It can only be converted from one form to another. So the realm of matter is there. The realm of energy is there. This is what we know. Realm of matter is available to our perception, and realm of energy is available to our intellect. Now, we need to, when we probe a little deeply, Vedanta says there is the deeper realm of reality which is there, which is called the consciousness. And many of us are caught in this realm of matter. Few of us only go to the realm of energy. Many of us are caught in the realm of matter. So we think this layer at the matter level, material level, is real. Because that's our experience today. So Vedanta says, no, don't go by your perceptions merely. You've got to probe it deeply. And then you come to the realm of energy, subtle realm. Then when you probe further deeply, you will find that there is this reality called the pure consciousness. And the pure consciousness that reflects through these material layers, what we know, is the conditioned consciousness. We are conscious of the objects and beings of this world in the waking state. And when we go through the dream state, we are conscious of the experiences in the dream world. And when we go to the deep sleep, there is nothing there for us to be conscious of. So the thought vritti is not there. It is there in a very, very rudimentary form. So there is no object for you to be conscious of. It doesn't mean that the consciousness is not there. So consciousness pervades the deep sleep state, it pervades the dream state, it pervades the waking state. And that pure consciousness is also beyond these three states. And that pure consciousness, technically in Sanskrit, Vedas call it as Brahman. Brahman comes from the root which means big. Brah means big. The biggest, infinite, which includes everything. There is nothing that it does not include. So that consciousness alone has come as energy and matter. And the matter becomes energy, energy becomes matter, and most of us are stuck in this. Very few people extricate themselves and go to the realm of the consciousness. Now this statement, Prajnanam Brahma, consciousness is Brahman, appears in Aitreya Upanishad in Rig Veda. Now when we say Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharvana Veda, doesn't mean they are going to talk about different things. Whatever the mantras of the Rig Veda reveals, the same thing is revealed in Sama Veda also. The Sama Veda is a musical Veda, whereas Yajur Veda is more prose format. And Atharvana Veda is the Veda that came much later. But all of them talk about the same truth. So in Rig Veda, Aitreya Upanishad, this aphorism, Prajnanam Brahma, is declared. That consciousness is Brahman. Meaning, that consciousness pervades all the three realms of reality. It is there in the material layer as well. It is there in the energy layer as well. And it remains in its pristine glory beyond these two. So that is Prajnanam Brahma. That consciousness is Brahman. Now, this prajnanam, when you say jnanam means knowing. Prajnanam means knowing well. So when you know well, when you go deeply and know anything in its essential nature, it is in the form of consciousness. So today, it is in the form of matter. See, for example, ice. Ice is solid. But ice can be in liquid form. When you melt it, it will become liquid, and then when you further heat it up, it will be in gaseous form. So similarly, it is the same consciousness that becomes energy and matter. That consciousness pervades the microcosm and the macrocosm. Macrocosm means the total, microcosm means the individual, you. That pure consciousness, the what, is what is the next aphorism called Tat Tvam Asi. You are today believing yourself to be this matter. The consolidated form from head to toe is what you believe yourself to be. So that matter is not you, nor even that energy. But when you probe deeply, Upanishad declares that consciousness the what. You are nothing but that Brahman. Ishvara and Jiva, Jiva Ishvara Aikya Sambandha. This is the essential message declared in the Upanishads. The Brahman alone is real, world is an illusion. Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya Jivo Brahmaiva Napara. Which means what? Brahman alone is Satyam. Jagat means this world is Mithya. Satya Mithya analysis we have already done. Satya means independent. Mithya means dependent. And we have discussed the example of a table and wood, or chair and wood. Wood is Satya, table is Mithya. Wood can exist without being made into a table. But table cannot exist without wood. So wood is not dependent on the table, but table is dependent on the wood. So in this example, you will say, table is Mithya, the form and name, and the essential material with which the table is made, the wood, is Satya. So that consciousness, which is Brahman, which is all pervading, the what? Which means what? This is the equation. The individual whom you think yourself to be today, the limited individual, is actually the unlimited, infinite, indivisible reality. So tat tvam asi. Tat means that. That consciousness. Tvam means you, the individual, asi. So you are that indivisible consciousness, not this individual matter. This is what the Upanishads declare. Now this statement has to be taken in, reflected, and the truth, the equation has to be solved and realized within. That is what it is. Then you also get the same experience of the reality like the Upanishadic masters. So the Upanishadic masters declare, Tat Tvam Asi. This aphorism comes in Chandogya Upanishad in Samaveda. So, Tat Tvam Asi means that the what? That reality, the what? See, if you take the ocean for example, in the ocean there are a lot of waves, bubbles, froth and foam. But all this froth and foam, bubble, waves and everything, they are essentially nothing but water. Now, just extrapolate your imagination and see if the bubble is believing itself to be individual separate entity, froth and foam a separate entity, waves, each one of them assuming a separate entity. But the reality, the truth, when we see from this angle, we know that all of them are essentially water. So that's what the Upanishads are declaring. It's the question of perception. So from this limited perspective, when the Upanishads are studied, what the Upanishad gives you is a broad perspective. And you may say, what of this perspective? How does it matter? It matters. In fact, this only matters. What kind of perspective you have. So when you consider yourself to be this limited individual, the fear automatically comes. Anything other than me is apart from me and it instills fear in me. It brings about insecurity in me. It throws me into imbalance. It gives me stress. So that stage is a state of samsara, the ups and downs in life we experience. And from that, slowly, slowly, when our perspective grows to that height, then there is no fear. The bubble doesn't have to fear the froth and foam. The froth and foam doesn't have to fear the waves. The small wave doesn't have to fear the big wave, because we understand that I am essentially divine. I remember when I was in my 10th standard, my English teacher, he used to be the, same teacher who used to teach us history and geography also. His name was Mr. George. He came into the class once and said, is there anyone in this class from royal family? Hardly anybody, So they said, what is he asking? Then is there anyone who is in this class who is from royal family? Nobody put up their hands. And he said, are you guys not ashamed? We are living in this country which is republic country. Republic means you choose your leader. So each one of you are from royal family. So it's a perspective, how you look at it. So when Britishers came, they gave a perspective to all of us, which majority of us in this country bought that perspective from them without thinking, which was that they are our rulers and we are slaves. But few people like Mahatma Gandhi, Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel and few others who fought for this nation's freedom, they had a completely different perspective. They said, listen, you guys have come into our country to plunder our wealth. You didn't come here to serve us. You came because our country's minerals, you know, all these resources, they wanted to take it away. So you had come to take and we are givers, you are takers. So we are the boss, we are not slaves. So it's a question of how you look at yourself. The moment you have this perspective, what is giving you stress and strain doesn't give you the stress and strain anymore. Thereafter, you suddenly find the peace and harmony within. And the peace and harmony promotes the prosperity outside, dynamism outside. So therefore, Upanishads, when they declare Tat Tvam Asi, they are not just matter of fact declaring it. They explain it and give you the methods to make that equation your own. Tat Tvam Asi. That pure consciousness or reality, the what? You are not the chair, you are the wood. It's the perspective. How you look at it? If you look at yourself as a chair, the chair looks at itself as a chair, it is a name given to that particular form. And the form is something that is destructible. And when the form is destroyed, the name is gone. So this name and form is something that is a very relative entity. It's not a permanent entity. But the name and form, the chair, is made up of the wood. That wood is the reality, the material with which that chair is made. So if you look at yourself as the wood, then you will see the other furnitures as well, which are also essentially made of the wood. So the moment you identify with the name and form, you constrain, restrain yourself. So we have fallen into this limited view today. It is we who are restraining ourselves. That's why beautifully Swami Ramtirtha says, a slave is a slave because he is free. A slave is a slave because he is free, meaning you are a free person. You have restrained yourself as slaves. It's because of your thoughts. When did you become this male or female? When did you become this limited individual? Engineer, doctor. You have restrained, constrained yourself through your thinking. Your thinking is not broadened. It is shrunk today. So therefore you look at yourself from this limited perspective. So the moment you study the Upanishads talk about this and they explain, Tat Tvam Asi, that the what, that reality, that supreme pure consciousness, the what. So that is equal to this. That is equal to you. You meaning not this material layer, not this energy, but your real self. Tat Tvam Asi. In fact, the entire Bhagavad Gita is an explanation of this Tat Tvam Asi. First six chapters talks about Tvam. Middle six chapters talks about Tat. Last six chapters talk about the connection between the two. So what the Upanishads declare in few verses is what the Bhagavad Gita is the aphorism given in Chandogya Upanishad, which comes in Sama Veda. Once you get this aphorism, from the guru, the student is supposed to go and practice and do the sadhana and make this equation his own or her own. So they follow a different aphorism or practice. It's called as I am Atma Brahma, means this Atma is Brahman. See, this word Atma can also be referred to this body or to the mind. In the Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter, if you remember, when we studied Utared Atmanatmanam Natmanam Avasadayet Atmaiva Atmano Banduhu Atmaiva Ripuratmanaha. Uses this word Atma there also. There means the mind. Uddarer Atmanatma. Lift yourself by yourself. Means lift your mind by yourself. Your own efforts. So the word Atma, how you identify? It's very interesting. See, when the pure consciousness functions only through the vasanas or causal body, pure consciousness, you can call it as PC. PC plus causal body means vasana, CB. So PC plus CB equals deep sleep state. You are a deep sleeper, DS. In this deep sleep means dreamless sleep. So what is that? Pure consciousness expressing through the causal body. So the technical term given for that personality called the deep sleeper in Sanskrit is prajna. So the deep sleeper is the prajna. So the same pure consciousness functions through the causal body and the subtle body. PC plus CB plus SB. Subtle body, you become the dreamer. The dreamer is given the technical term called Taijasa. Then, when pure consciousness functions through the causal body, subtle body and the gross body. So PC plus CB plus SB plus GB, gross body. That personality is, using this word this, when pure consciousness is identified only with causal body, your abhimanam is, I am a deep sleeper now, going through ignorance and ananda, bliss. Then, when the pure consciousness identifies with the subtle body, now your abhimanam or identification is with the subtle body alone, still not yet come to the gross body. There you think yourself to be the dreamer. You only give importance to the dream world. There is no identification with the gross body yet. When further the pure consciousness comes and identifies with the gross body, then you become the Vishwa. Vishwa is the name. All of us who are attending this class today, everybody, each one can be called as Vishwa. But when there is transaction amongst all the Vishwas, to make it even clearer, we give different names, Mamta, Madhu, etc. But otherwise, everybody essentially is the waker. Now these investigations, the study and all that can only be done in the waking state because it's the state in where the pure consciousness has fully identified with all the three bodies. So you can only create karma in this state, you can only destroy karma in this state. It can't be done in any other state. So when you investigate, then you understand that that pure consciousness which is limitless, slowly, slowly has identified and become this what? Prajna, deep sleeper, Tejasa, dreamer and Vishwa, the waker. Same way, slowly, slowly we keep on sending our thoughts and we become that. Now, you are born in a particular family and slowly, slowly they say this is your father, this is your mother, this is your grandmother. A constant identification, you become that. Then with reference to your community, you become that. Then with reference to your country, you become that. You, with reference to your species, you become that. slowly, slowly you have become that due to your identification. So through the inquiry, through the sadhana, you peel off these identifications one by one by one. Then you come and see the Atma, which is unconditioned. That, he says, I am Atma. This Atma is actually Brahman. When this Atma is conditioned by various ways, you have become that. And then once you have become that, now you are struggling and finding it difficult to question that. You don't want to question that. If somebody calls you as Mamta, Shweta, you have no problem. But if somebody comes and suddenly they have to call you Brahman, you say, be careful with this guy. Who is this guy? Brahman, Atman, infinite. Yeah, I am not infinite, I am limited, I am this personality. We think this is, because this is how we are, we've been sending our thoughts all this while. So when you probe, you will come to this state which the student declares finally, I am Atma Brahma. This self is Brahman, not this small limited identification. This is an aphorism which is in Mandukya Upanishad, which comes in Atharvana Veda. Then finally, when the student finds the inner self equal to the Brahman, he drops all his identifications with the material equipments and declares, Aham Brahmasmi. Aham Brahmasmi is an aphorism that comes in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad in Yajurveda. Aham Brahmasmi means, this I is Brahman. This I is Brahman. Now, when you say, I am an Indian, I am a male or a female, you are equating I to India, Indian, which is a qualification of the I. It's talking about I. It is not I is equal to. I, which is identified with this nation, is qualified as Indian or American, Chinese. So these are all qualities of I today, the conditionings. Similarly, when you say, I am a male, I am a female, it's another qualification. It is talking about your sex. I am a Christian, I am a Hindu, I am a Muslim. It is from that religious angle. But I, without any qualification, modification, what that I is. So when you say, I am Brahman, it is not a qualification or quality of I. It is about, it is not about I, it is I. So therefore, I is equal to Brahman is the declaration. The student who has removed all the layers of conditioning declares. That is the aphorism that is there in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So, which is in Yajurveda. These are the four aphorisms through which Vedas, they only try to give you this perspective. What is this perspective? This microcosm is actually one with macrocosm. The substratum of both the microcosm and the macrocosm is Brahman. That's it. The essential reality, the substratum, the connecting factor, the oneness is that pure consciousness. This is what the Upanishads do. So the Upanishads, which is the last portion of the Vedas, what is called as Vedanta, declares this truth. Now this Upanishad word, Upanishad, there are different interpretations for this word also. Upa means near, Ni means below, Shad means sit. Now, this is a very interesting word, Upanishad. Upa means, like I said, near. What is this? that America, this India. That India, this Delhi. That Delhi, this house. That house, this room. That room, this body. That body, this mind. That mind, this vasanas. That vasanas, this pure consciousness or atma. This atma ke baad, there is no that this business. So the nearest is atma. Opa means near. That atma which is you, the nearest, has to be learned being near the guru. Because what happens is, when we go far away from the guru, we get involved in the world. Then we start identifying with different paths. So you've got to stay near the guru. If you have to stay near the guru, guru means dispeller of ignorance, dispeller of darkness. That which dispels darkness is light. Similarly, that which dispels ignorance is knowledge. So guru, in the Mundaka Upanishad, he describes the guru as one who is Trotriyam and Brahmanishta. Means one who has heard from the guru systematically and has brought about the transformation within and realized the self. So you got to stay near that guru. If you have to stay near that guru, you should have moved away from the world. You should have moved away from the world doesn't mean you run away from the world. What does it mean? It means you have understood that whatever this world offers, you categorize them all under one category. What category? Transient category. Within that transient category, depending upon its usage, things are valued differently. But all of them can come under one category, which is called as transient category. Like the poem says, even this shall pass away. They are only useful from the transactional purpose. Iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold. The transactional purpose. So, you clearly understand that all these are useful at the material realm reality and at the energy realm reality. But you have moved away. Now you want to go deeper into the realm of the consciousness. That is why you have gone and surrendered to the guru. So, being near the guru. Upa. Then, ni. Ni means below. Sitting below the guru, looking up. This signifies devotion. This signifies surrender. See, a river originates technically from the ocean. The water evaporates due to sun's heat, pours down as rain, falls on the mountains and valleys, flows as rivers, and they again get back to the ocean. Then the cycle is complete. It starts from the ocean, gets back to the ocean. Now, when it is flowing, each river has its own individual independent identity, as it were. There are some rivers, the water is sweet. So, each river has its own separate entity, identity. But when the river goes and finally merges with the ocean, its independent identity is lost. The river merges with the ocean. The identity called the river is gone. Then the new identity called ocean is achieved. So a river, when it becomes the ocean, river will not exist. Remember this. River cannot be existing while it meets the ocean. When it meets the ocean, the river dissolves. So, God and ego cannot coexist. Ego is like snow. When the sun has not come out, the snow is formed. When the sun comes, the snow melts. They cannot exist together. So similarly, ego, which means edging God out. That ego is due to the ignorance of the divinity. So when that ego is completely surrendered, only then the divinity can be realized. So if a person is not ready for that, if the person is not ready for that, he or she cannot realize the self. So ni means below, surrender. You are ready to surrender the ego. So in Telugu, in one of the Telugu king's court, a lot of wise people. So he asked once, in this wise council, is there anyone who thinks that they can go to the state of Brahman, realize the self? He asked that in Telugu. And nobody answered. One wise person in the group, he stood up and said in Telugu, Nenu pote povuchinu. In Telugu, what it means is, Nenu pote povuchinu. Literally, if you translate it, it means, maybe I may go. Maybe I may realize the self. But there is a pun in these words. Nenu pote means, if the I and mine goes, Nenu pote povuchinu. Anyone can realize the self when the small identification drops. See, the fear is there today that if I drop this identity, what will happen to me? That's the problem. You know, I think I have got all these identities now. If I lose this, what will happen? That's why we go and create more and more identities. Because of this insecurity. Now, see, whatever examples I'm going to give in this class, look at it from the Upanishadic perspective. Don't take it personally. So what we are doing, we become member in this club, that club, you know, all sorts of things. Thai group, and then YEO, YPO, this, all this. This is at the relative level, it has its own limited usage. But what happens is, we become that. And then even in that, this thing, there are different chapters. We get associated with that chapter. My chapter versus your chapter. All this limited identification. Over a period of time, we get caught. Even going to ashram, we become caught there. My guru, my shishya, my this thing, my that thing, my guru, bhai. Well, it's a beautiful relationship, like the relationship between Sri Krishna and Sudama. It's a fascinating relationship. They both were in the same Sandipani ashram. But what you need to understand is, you've got to break those shackles. Otherwise, it's impossible to know the truth. See, if you just merely know the information at the superficial realm, you can't taste it. It's like, another gross example I can think of is what they do, the celebration in Delhi, that holy celebration. Now you are, let us say you are wearing like me, these white and white clothes, and new clothes you are wearing, white and white, and you are seeing all these people playing holy. You also want to enjoy. You also want to be with them and enjoy. But if you get in, your clothes will become dirty. If I get in, my clothes will become dirty. But staying away, I'm not enjoying. So you're neither here nor there. If you really want to enjoy the bliss that everybody is experiencing while playing the holy, you just got to let go. That's the word ni. Ni means below. Below is not just simply sitting down and looking up to the guru. These are all symbolic. But technically what it means is, you are ready to give up this limited identity. Today, I for you is equal to individual. The small I. The small I has to die, so the new big I, which has always been there, emerges. So unless and until you keep this limitation, it's not going to happen. That's why the main qualification to be able to gain the total is to lose the limited self. Swami Ramakrishna beautifully explains this. The way to gain anything is to lose it. An object is known by the color it reflects, not by the color it absorbs. The seven vajoric color impinges on the object, but if it absorbs all colors and reflects blue, it's known by blue. If it reflects green and absorbs other colors, it's known green. If it absorbs all colors, it becomes black. If it releases all colors, doesn't absorb anything, it's white. So that is the reason in spiritual field and politics and all that, they wear this white and all that. Which means what? You got to completely reflect. Not hoarding and keeping for me, mine, future. This thought, if you're holding on to those thoughts, you are still not yet come to the level of Upanishadic student. That is what I'm explaining here. Ni means you have done everything with the world. There are four ashramas we talk in our Sanatana Dharma. They call Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa. So in Brahmacharya ashrama, you learn the Dharma from the Guru. Then you live your life according to Dharma in the Grahastha ashrama. You go through the marriage and you live that life dharmically. Thus slowly, slowly, your mind moves away from the world. Then you come to Vanaprastha and Sannyas. Vanaprastha is living in Vana, forest, meaning withdrawn state, simple living, high thoughts. Then you go even deeper in that, which is Sannyas. Completely come out. So in fact, Upanishads are for people who are in Vanaprastha and Sannyas. They are near the Guru, sitting below, ready to give this limited identity because they have understood this is not me. But what am I? I need to merge with that. So I am ready to merge this limited with the total. If I'm not ready to give myself away, I can't experience the total. Like I can't experience the bliss of the people who are playing holy unless I am ready to let go and put all the colors on my clothes. I should become like the child. If I hold on and then I restrict myself, there is no way I can realize. So opa ni shad means sit. Your mind should be in a state of withdrawal, not running around extrovertedly, should be introvertedly sitting down. That's what shad means. So a mind which is not bothered about what is happening in the world. A mind which knows the value of the world but has no value for the world. That mind you need. It has got nothing to do with your possessions. You can still have all your possessions. But you should, like Oliver Goldsmith says, should have this in your, that he who steals my purse steals trash. That kind of mental mature. Because only then you are ready to give up. See, who, you are not ready to give up the stake. How will you get the infinite? Not possible. Not possible. So you need to be ready to let go. Then you will experience the Upanishads. So it's not the words of the Guru. The Shruti will make a difference in you when you are qualified thus. So that's what the word Upanishad is saying. Upa Nishat. Near, below, sit. Near the Guru, you sit below with devotion and surrender with your mind which is absolutely introverted. Suddenly someone comes and tells you, you know, there is this new thing that has come up. You're not bothered about anything. You forget about it. Let it come. is the same thing, different model. That's all. Like, you know, what they do, they keep on, you know, car companies, motorbikes, all these, the same engine, little bit they tweak the design. And you'll see the new design is better. It comes with a little new gadget, comes with this feature, that feature. This is the world. Same energy becomes matter, matter becomes energy, the same tamasha goes on and on and on and on. And the mind, which is not turned introverted, still feels that sense of limitation, gets entertained. And it is not ready for it to be dissolving in the total. It will not get that perspective. So the Upanishad word says what the literature will give you and how you need to qualify for it. That's what it is. Upanishad. Also the term Upanishad means Brahma Jnana. The word Ni means Nishchaya. It will give you the knowledge of Brahman, certainly removing all the doubts. That's what the Upanishads are. So in other words, it will tell you who you are. You know that with no doubts whatsoever if you are approaching the Upanishads with the necessary qualifications. That is what Upanishads are. Near, below, sit. So there are many, many Upanishads. Out of them, 10 are considered to be very, very orthodox, because they are called as principal Upanishads, because they were commented upon by the great masters Adi Shankara, Ramanuja and Madhva. Adi Shankara was the pioneer of Advaita philosophy. Ramanuja was the pioneer of Vishishtadvaita philosophy. And Madhvacharya was the pioneer of Dvaita philosophy. Now this Advaita, Vishishtadvaita and Dvaita, what are they? They are different darshan. See, if anybody has done engineering, you will understand this. In engineering, we have this engineering drawing. Like for example, your house or your office building, whatever it is. When you draw that, there is an isometric view. When you draw that in that angle, there is a front view, there is a side view, there is a top view. So two different sides, the front view, back view, top view. Each view are giving the perspective of that very same building only. But it's not giving the entire perspective, that direction. So if you look at it from the level of the body, beautifully it was summarized by Lord Hanumanji. He summarizes all these three school of thoughts. He says, Deha Bhave Dasosmi. I look at it from the level of the matter, looks separate. Jiva Bhave Tvadam Shakaha. So when I look at it from the body, I'm your servant. When I look at it from the level of the subtle body, the jiva, I am part of you. Atma Bhave Tvameva Aham. So when I look at it from the pure consciousness point of view, one and the same. So therefore, Deha Bhave Dasosmi, Jiva Bhave Tvadam Shakaha, Atma Bhave Tvameva Aham. So these great masters are giving different darshanas of the Upanishads to the different students at different levels. But they are talking about the same reality. Reality is not different. The same reality. And this reality cannot be captured by words. Not possible. You cannot capture emotions by words. How can you capture the pure consciousness which is behind your thinking and emotions and perceptions? So therefore, when you go deeper and deeper, subtler and subtler, words fail. You can't capture it in words. So the Upanishads, which are talking about the truth which cannot be captured in words, through the words. So when we study the Upanishads, we need to actually see through the words and understand. Not get caught in the words. See, a lot of times what happens is people get caught into this hair-splitting analysis of these words, you will miss the truth. See, I'll give you an example. Pitambara. Now, when I say Pitambara, what comes to your mind is Lord Krishna, Vishnu. He is wearing Pitambara. Pitambara means yellow cloth. So, literally the word Pitambara means yellow cloth. But when I say Pitambara, what you understand is Krishna, not yellow cloth. The one who is wearing the yellow cloth. So this is the thing. But unfortunately, a lot of us get caught in this hair-splitting analysis of the grammar and the words and all that. Then you miss the truth. And it's not possible. Luckily, we just did Bhajagovinda. There you saw, no, that old man sitting on the Ganges, banks of the Ganges, trying to memorize the grammar. That doesn't mean you don't know any grammar. You know the grammar, it's helpful, it's good. But here, it's equating the I, removing the identification from the surface identification, taking it and identifying it with the sublime. And for that, you need to have been prepared differently. So therefore, the words fail in communicating the truth, but brilliantly these masters use those words to communicate to the students who are liberated in these subtle terse verses. Just here and there, the student who is also ready, qualified, instantly catches it. There are different types of students, levels of students. Some students are like camphor. Some are like charcoal. Some are like banana tree or plantain tree stem. Camphor catches fire. The moment you strike the matchstick, take it closer, it catches fire. So there are sattvic students who are well qualified and ready through the sadhana, the pure. They catch the message of the Upanishad like this. Whereas students who are like charcoal, they need a lot of fanning, explanation, support. They are students who are like charcoal. Like, you know, you light it, but you got to keep on fanning it. This is a Madhyama category. You know, Uttama is the highest. Madhyama is the middle. Mediocre. The lower is Adama. Which is compared, that student is compared to the banana tree stem. It never catches fire. Impossible. That is why again and again the Shastras tell us, don't give this knowledge to one who is not qualified. So the Upanishadic master gave this knowledge only to the students who were qualified. They risked their lives when they found their student to know the truth. Because you got to have crossed the realms of the matter and energy to find this truth. And you should be ready to lose your identity now. You don't want to lose anything, you want to keep everything and then do it, not possible. Simple thing like we are not even ready to switch off the mobile phone for 1 hour. There's so much of identification at this realm. What will you get? So Vedanta says, Bhagavad Gita says, don't unsettle them. Let them be in that realm. You want to experience the bliss, you should be ready to get wet, soaked in those colors. Should let go of all this. You should have come to that level of maturity. That is the student of the Upanishad. So, this Keno Upanishad. Now, it's very, very interesting. Kena means by whom? Kena Upanishad, when they combine, as per Sandhi rule, it becomes Keno Upanishad. Now, this Kena Upanishad is part of Samaveda. And Keno means by whom? It's a question. By whom propelled all this? This is the first verse when we get there. I'll explain that in detail. So the Kena Upanishad is part of Samaveda. Now this Kena Upanishad is given in four parts. Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, Part 4. Part 1, when he gives the truth through the Part 1, when the student asks, immediately the Guru gives. When the Guru gives the knowledge, the student who is highly qualified, in the very first part he or she understands and that's it. They've realized that's it. And those students who are like charcoal, who required little more explanation, then part B or part 2, second part. Then, if you still linger, then part 3 and part 4, which is given in a story format. A story is also very beautiful. It has a lot of symbolic explanations. It's talking about the same truth in a story format. So, the Kena Upanishad caters to all different categories of students. That's what I'm coming to. Like the students of the category of camphor, charcoal, and even if you are at some level of banana tree stem. So different, cryptic, little more explanation, and story format explanation. All three are there in Kena Upanishad. So the word Kena, by whom propelled, he asks the question, by whom? So he straight away goes to Brahman. He's not interested in how to deal with my world, how to do this, how to be successful here, how to, you know, he's not bothered. He straight away comes to the point, goes and directly asks about the truth, God, ultimate. He's not ready to waste his time even a little bit. And we don't even know who the Guru is. Some of the Upanishads you may, but they are not bothered. Because like I said, the Guru's form is only by the way. Truth comes through the form. See, when you attune yourself with that highest, for example, a soldier, or even these classical musicians are seen, they are performing Hindustani or Carnatic. They are sitting there for like 5 hours, 6 hours. And they attune themselves into that realm. They are singing various ragas. Beautiful rendering is going on. Those 5-6 hours, they don't exist. They have attuned themselves with that highest. They are not existing there. That is why even the audience, they are in it. Everybody is forgotten. That I've not eaten, I've got this, I've got everything is forgotten there. Why? Because you are attuned to that different level. The same thing happens to the soldier. Battlefield fighting, he's forgotten about his children, this, that, the realm is gone. So when you are doing that, that kind of actions are actually executed by divinity, by God. So the Upanishadic masters are talking in these forms, but it is actually the Brahman or reality that is talking through them. So it really doesn't matter who is the Guru. The real Guru is God, Brahman. That's why we say Apaurusham. Vedas were given by God himself or herself. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, if you remember, Sri Krishna says, I declare this through the Vedas. I declare this through the Vedas means what? The I that Sri Krishna is referring to is the consciousness. the same consciousness the Guru here is identified with, that pure consciousness gives out this knowledge. So, to the extent you are ready and you become the Upanishadic student, near, below, sit, Nishchaya Jnanam will come to you. Samyak Jnanam means with no doubts you will see the I as Brahman. If you really qualify and sit down and study the Upanishads, the outcome will be what? A river would have died, the ocean would have been acclaimed. This is what will happen. Otherwise, what would have happened is, you would have just studied the Upanishads and known few words, that's about it. Therefore, here these students who have come, they have come with a tremendous sharadha. They haven't come, they came with only one way ticket. No two way ticket. If this didn't happen, maybe I'll go to another ashram. No, nothing like that. They have come to experience the bliss and they are ready to sacrifice anything for it. That's the test. That's why traditionally when the student approaches the Guru, you know, in the hair, they just have a small tuft. Hair represents your desires and ego. Very, very interesting, you know. During this pandemic time, you couldn't go to this hair cutting salon. So you do it yourself. My haircut is a simple thing, I do it myself with that machine. When I did it for my son, he got very angry because he became almost bald. He said, what is this you have done, you know, taken away my whole. So he looks completely different, right? So how I look, my ego, this me, this body identification, all this is there in that hairstyle. It has to be long hair, curly, side this, that and all sorts of things because we look differently. It's talking about this outer personality. So the hair is all removed. Means with reference to the world, everything is gone. Just that little tuft symbolically telling that few desires to liberate, to realize the self. That mumukshatva, nothing else. That's the symbolic thing of the student going with a little tuft and he takes that dry wood, you know. So that he takes to the Guru. What it means is, I am like that dry wood, ready. You can strike the matchstick, the fire of knowledge, I will catch it. If you are wet, you are not going to catch it. Not possible. So with the worldly involvements, when we study the Upanishads, what we get is only the information. It's very difficult to bring about the transformation. But the Upanishadic students, they approached with a little tuft and the sticks in their hands went to the Guru. Meaning, I am like that stone. I have given myself to you. You are the sculptor. What does the sculptor do? He sees the beautiful Ganesha in that rock. In that huge boulder rock, he sees the Ganesha. What does he do? He brings that, you know, chisel and hammer and strikes it at the right places so that he removes the portions. He knows which to be removed. He removes those portions. Then a beautiful Ganesha emerges out of that boulder. So there is Ganesha in that rock. But the sculptor knows which portions to be removed so that Ganesha emerges. So the rock has submitted itself to the sculptor. Similarly, the student goes and submits himself or herself to the Guru. The Guru then chisels out those extra layers which are covering final few small little layers here and there. Once that is removed, the beautiful self emerges out of everyone. There is this self in each one of us. We are stuck in our religious backgrounds, in our caste background, in our body backgrounds, in our, you know, this background and that background. We need to come out of all this. It's very difficult. It's not easy. Firstly, you can't even come out of your, you know, this gross identification. Limited things. Then it's not possible. That's why they emphasize on yajna, dana, tapa. If you are not ready for this, you will not get that. So this is the student, this is the guru, this is the message. So the Keno Upanishad is given this four different chapters. First the subtle philosophy is given, then little explanation, then comes the story format for the students who still need more explanation. This is the introduction to the Upanishad class today. Let's see the Upanishad from the coming weeks. Let's conclude the class now. Om Purnamadha Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyaiva Buddhyatmanava Prakriteshvabhavat Karomi Adhyayam Sakalam Parasmai Narayanayeti Samarpayami.